You know, talking about aviation, even from the 60s, we still have to realize how good we have it in this country, because we have pretty easy access to airports, to flight instructors, to mechanics, even to fuel. And, you know, we're even lucky enough to have some really great grass strips all over the country. But imagine if you were flying somewhere where aviation was not as accessible, where it was difficult to learn how to fly. And even if you do learn how to fly, there are really no facilities, no mechanics. You have to not only be the pilot, but the person who can keep the airplane going. And when you look for some place to land, you better make sure it's the right place. Well, that's sort of the challenges that face the pilots of the Kenyan Wildlife Service. And joining us on stage next is Miles O'Brien, who produced a documentary about these incredible pilots and the folks from this country who came to Kenya to help these pilots in their wildlife mission and to help them be better pilots, safer pilots, and to be able to do the work that they do to protect the wildlife in Africa. So please join me in welcoming Mr. Miles O'Brien.
Thank you, Steve. Good to see you all here tonight. It's great to be here in Oshkosh. Great to be back. Last night I was here. We were talking with some missionary pilots and some pilots who are involved in angel flight missions and learning about all the good things that they do and are able to do because of aviation, because of their love of airplanes. All the good things about flying that we don't necessarily hear in the mainstream media all the time. Today, I had the opportunity to spend some time with the Able Flight organization, who pinned some wings on some folks who are physically challenged, but do not let that get in the way of their desire to fly. So, you know, what that tells me is that aviation is meaningful to people in so many different ways. It's a point that is kind of just, it's kind of the period on a sentence for me, which began earlier this year in February when I had the opportunity to go to Kenya and see what it is like to be there, for one thing, which I hadn't had the opportunity to do. But we sort of take for granted, I guess, we may think about those endangered animals, but who is protecting them and how are they protected? Well, as it turns out, aviation is an important key to all that, and training the pilots to do that job is a difficult thing to do. In Kenya, there aren't a lot of flight instructors. The mission is very challenging, and there aren't many ways for these pilots to do their job safely. But there's been an amazing effort in the past decade or so, spearheaded by Patty Wagstaff, this year joined by Rich Sugden, John and Martha King, to go over and give these pilots who are truly doing an important mission, not just for Kenya, not just for themselves, but for all of us, to protect these endangered animals, giving them a week of training like the best training in the world, frankly. You couldn't get better training anywhere. That's the basis for the film. That was why I went. It was a fulfilling trip in so many ways, taught me a lot about not just protecting our planet, but what it means to love aviation and what it means to have a true passion for things and what it's like when a couple of passions mixed together can be a very powerful thing. A few key members of the movie are here. We're going to have an opportunity to do a quick conversation and hopefully take a few of your questions afterward. So without further ado, I give you Over Africa. It's hard to imagine a more beautiful place to fly low and slow, hugging the terrain.
Two big bulls right there.
This is a place that returns the embrace to those who bring an open heart, a curious mind, and a burning desire to protect what is here.
I love what I do. It's a very good job. I love flying. I love looking at the animals. I love that kind of job because it has a meaning. It's a job with a meaning.
That's Anthony Kurokan. He's the chief pilot for the Kenya Wildlife Service. I strapped into the back seat of his beat-up Aviat Husky as he patrolled the Tsavo West Game Preserve, one of Kenya's largest. When we banked sharply over Africa's big, beleaguered animals, it seemed as if I could reach out and touch them. Sure, it's a thrill-a-minute, trunk-top-level sightseeing mission, but there is much more to it than that.
On a typical patrol, you fly about 100 feet above ground. And what we're looking at, this is an aerial surveillance. We're looking for, apart from monitoring the trend of the animals, the movement of the elephants, the rhinos, and all the other animals in the park, we're also trying to look for anything unusual that is in the park, that might have come in the park.
Like stray cattle that need some aerial herding, or stranded tourists on safari, or most important, poachers who kill elephants and rhinos for their tusks and horns. It's an age-old problem in Africa, and it's getting worse. But it would be even more rampant were it not for patrols like this.
Even though you're doing something that is important, this job is very hard. And you need to have the passion for this job, the like for the animal, for you to be able to keep this job. You are really conserving. Conservation for the sake of the world, your children and the generation to come.
It's a high-minded yet high-risk mission. For one thing, KWS planes are an inviting target for well-armed poachers, many of whom come from Somalia, where they are battle-hardened and armed to the teeth.
This guy's Afghan. These days they have rocket launchers. So every day things keep on improving, so it becomes a little bit dangerous.
Have you been shot at?
Severally with a gun.
Really?
Yeah.
Not hit, though?
Not hit, though. Yeah.
Others have been hit, right?
It's happened. We've seen a few planes that have got guns holes that have been shot, but it wasn't that anything major.
Yeah, still, could have been.
One lucky or maybe skillful poacher even lanced a Kenya Wildlife Service airplane with a spear.
They come from in the middle, they're not very good.
Before we left Nairobi, I met the man in charge of the KWS Air Wing, Solomon Nyanji.
Without the aircraft, I would promise you we cannot be able to conserve our wildlife in Kenya anymore.
It's dangerous flying though, isn't it?
I would say it's dangerous flying because you're going to look for poachers who are armed from Somalia, and when they come through for the rhinos or the elephant, they don't care whom they kill. As long as they get the horn of the rhino or they get the tusk from the elephant, they don't care. Even if they kill 10 people, to them is nothing.
Solomon showed me the latest batch of KWS airplanes in for repairs after a wreck.
This one, FOC, 5 Yankee.
Solomon told me they used to have on average one big crash every year and countless forced landings in the bush. Guess it stands to reason, given the demands on these pilots and the slim margin for error as they poke along near stall speed 100 feet above the ground. Solomon himself went down in a helicopter on Mount Kenya in 2007. He was rescued 8 days later, barely alive. The pilot of this plane was trying to shoo some cows out of a game park. He was so focused on being an aerial shepherd, he did not trim the control surfaces properly.
And he came very low, and he was trying to throw that flash to the cows. By the time he came back to control the aircraft, it was too low. He tried to put it back, it couldn't go back. He went down, he killed about 6 cows.
Oh boy.
And he came out without any injury.
Lucky him, but a half dozen cows got the short end of that deal. It was clear to me what Solomon meant when he told me this.
So with that one, our type of flying is not what you are trained in the flying school. This is a special type of flying.
Special indeed. The special training is what brought me here to the Kiliguni Airstrip in the Tsavo West National Park in southern Kenya. For a week in February, the tail draggers and the red dirt were flying as the pilots of the Kenya Wildlife Service, a dozen of them in all, gathered for an extraordinary, intense, week-long flying clinic. Their instructors, some of the best pilots in the world, led by none other than Paddy Wagstaff. You know that Paddy Wagstaff, the 3-time U.S. National Aerobatic Champ, Aviation Hall of Famer, and air show superstar.
The airframe itself is new, factory new.
She's here because of this man's persistence. Bill Clark is a New York-born Israeli biologist, wildlife conservationist, international poaching investigator, and pilot. He has spent the last 2 decades helping the Kenya Wildlife Service fight the good fight to save the big animals.
That they want to be a world-class institution, not just another African wildlife agent. They want to be world-class, highly professional. To do that, you have to have world-class instructors, no way around it. And I'm just looking for the best. And looking for the best also, because there are many very competent, very skillful instructors and pilots, but I want someone who loves nature. I want to do it from the heart as well as from the head. These are the two qualities that really define the sort of person that I was looking for.
Right about that time, he was reading Patty's autobiography, Fire and Air.
In the book, I read many passages about her love of animals and wildlife, nature. She wrote a poem at the end of it, reflecting many of the attitudes that I was sensitive to. I said, this is the sort of person that I'd like to work with as well.
So Bill wrote Patty a letter.
He said, your whole focus on flying is about precision and discipline. So that's exactly what these guys need. And since you do air shows in the summer and the spring, and you have an off season, why don't you come down in the winter?
She blew him off about as quickly as you can say snap roll and went about her stomach churning business. But he did not give up. The letters kept coming.
And something clicked to me, and I said, you know, why am I being so close-minded about this? I've always wanted to go to Africa. I've always wanted to go in a working or volunteer type situation. I don't want to just go as a tourist. And I've always wanted to go to Kenya in particular. And I think I'm being a little close-minded. So I wrote him back, and we started a discourse, and he was in the States, and we met. And I realized he was a really, you know, great individual and had a lot going, you know, toward this. So I gave it a try in 2000, came over here, and been coming ever since.
It's not an easy place to teach. This is what passes for the terminal at Kilaguni International. The fuel is hand-pumped from drums, and it was a good thing the nearest FAA inspector was 7,000 miles away, as the mechanics have to be pretty good at improvising to keep the ragtag fleet in the air.
They're all high-time airplanes, most of them except the Catalan is second-hand. That's a 97. I think that's the newest airframe in the whole fleet. That's 12 years old now.
And given the number of wrecks that they've had, have any of these airplanes had incidents in the past? Have they had any wrecks?
Every airplane has.
Really?
Everyone.
The pilots all tell compelling stories as well. Earning your wings in a third world country with a per capita annual income of $1,600 is no small feat.
What a lot of people I know might make in a week, people here make in a year. So, and the income of the pilots is not very high either. And so for a pilot to go out and get a rating on their own, and find the funding and save the money is really extraordinary.
But it's hard to douse a burning desire to be in the air, whatever ground you may be standing on. Listen to the pilots, George Mwangi.
I think as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to be a pilot.
Isaac Oyeli.
It was my dream. Flying was my dream. And I can really tell you that I've come this far because of my own initiative.
Moses Lelesit.
I joined KWS in 1990. And before I joined KWS, I used to have a dream one day I'll become a pilot.
But money isn't the only obstacle. It is the culture as well. Here it is all about what tribe you are in. Moses is a Maasai, nomadic cattle herders, fierce warriors with a deep sense of pride and tradition.
So people are even wondering why. Why Maasai fly? Why don't you go and look livestock? Say no, they don't like flying. So to me, I like very well. And when I was in training school, I was being harassed maybe with my colleagues, police. I said, where are you going? There's no cows here, livestock here. Why? I told them, this aircraft are livestock. That's why I'm here. I want to become one of the pilots in this country. So the guys are wondering. They said, okay, fine. They thought maybe I'm crazy, but I'm not crazy.
In some ways, they're like any other group of pilots, and in other ways, they have really unique and extraordinary challenges.
Okay. For the pattern, when we come in,
it's time to get to work.
You don't have to
when Patty Wagstaff takes a student under her wing, she means it. That's where she briefs them before every flight, drawing lines in the sand to illustrate her points.
There's no formula to it. You don't look at this group of pilots like you would any group of pilots, but maybe more so this group, because the minimum standards haven't been really high out of necessity, and each one is vastly different in skill and experience level than the others.
So we get an 1800 and check our mags.
Some of them have very little experience, just have a basic private pilot's license, and they're given an airplane like a Husky or a Super Cub, and they're sent out into the bush to patrol a huge area, sometimes thousands square miles, sometimes, and that's that's why people have made mistakes, and that's why people make mistakes. They're not supervised or can't be supervised, and so they need recurrency training, and of course that's what this program's about.
It's also about teaching them to do the right thing in a heartbeat.
If there's a problem with the engine at 150 feet above the ground and 60 knots, you don't have a lot of options. When you're down low, close to the ground, you don't have the opportunity to go through that whole checklist. You have to respond to emergencies reflexively rather than by a checklist. And one of the things Patty is teaching them is reflexive response to an emergency.
If you see a poacher or an elephant, you're supposed to make sure that you're not carried away by the activity that is down there or whatever you're looking. But you fly the aircraft. You fly the aircraft first. Primary is flying the aircraft. Secondary is looking.
Patty also gives them a lesson in aerobatics 101.
It has been fun, marvelous, enjoyable. I really liked it because I'd never done such kind of things like the loops, the turns, the steep turns, extreme steep turn up to 90 degrees bank. I'd never done that, but today I was able to do it. I was able to do the spin and the loops. It's been a great, great, great experience for me, and I'm sure I'm going to do more of that.
To fly aerobatics well, you have to be very coordinated, and you have to feel the airplane well. You can't fly aerobatics properly by the numbers, so to speak, but it's more almost like a dance, isn't it? You have to be very fluid with it and try to make the maneuver smooth. And that's all by sensing things. And she's trying to instill that into them.
I mean, if anything occurred or happened, I think with her behind me, I was feeling very confident.
But you probably wanted to prove you're a good pilot to her, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to. I mean, she's a lady and, I'm a lion. So, you want to prove to the lioness that lion is in charge.
I think sometimes some of the guys fly better with a male pilot. Mm-hmm. And then maybe have to get used to it a little bit. But I think that's true anywhere. It could be the States. Some women fly better with women, better with men, whatever. And so I don't have any problem with it. And, when it all comes down to it, we get up in the air and I can show them a few things.
There is
and
that.
If they give me any, problems, I'll just flip them upside down. So.
This year, Patty had some help from another seasoned tailwheel jockey, Rich Sugden.
We have the Husky dealership for the Northwest United States, so I've got a lot of time in the Husky. I fly in the Idaho backcountry a lot. So she asked if I wanted to come over here and help train the Kenya Wildlife Service pilots.
He also flies in air shows in a vintage Navy FJ-4 Fury, the only one of its kind still in the air, one of several sweet old warbirds he has in his toy box in Wyoming. He was constantly reminded he wasn't in Wyoming anymore.
They had been sort of trained in one fashion. They all flew pretty much the same way. They didn't have much of a concept of safety. For example, just flying circuits, touch and goes around the field, they would go way out away from the airport and make real wide downwind legs, real long final legs. And so I just started shutting the engine off and showing them what would happen if they lost the engine. And then they started flying closer to the airport and, just tried to do some practical things like that. They were making full flap takeoffs where you can't see down the runway. And one of the big dangers is game running across the runway. So we got them to make partial flap takeoffs and get the nose up where they could see real well, that sort of thing.
We are getting a lot. We are just best checks and then maybe reminding us what we are, maybe we are not being there, really. And now we are brushing on, and our stalls, turnings, the way you can dress animals, the way you can direct people, and the way you can maneuver in case of any emergency. So we are getting a lot of experience, anyway.
They're just so eager to learn and so eager to listen. And it's the only time that they get together. Say they have 12 pilots total right now in the Kenya Wildlife Service. And it's the only time that they're able to get together as a group and sit down and hangar fly.
You may even stay for a whole year without, seeing your colleague. But with this kind of exercise, it really brings us together.
And I see them sitting at lunch and dinner with their hands doing this kind of stuff and discussing it. And I'll go fly with a student and he'll say, you know, you showed something to so-and-so. Would you show me that too? And I'm like, yes, that's so great that they're asking these questions that they want to learn.
If you're maneuvering, you're watching something underground, you want to have a sense of how much load factor you're putting on the aircraft.
They were eager at the ground school as well. And who wouldn't be, given the fact that teachers are aviation royalty? The kings, John and Martha, have taught more pilots to fly than anyone on the planet. They joined Patty's mission for the first time on this trip.
These young men are excited to learn, and not just because it's part of their job. They are thirsty for knowledge and so appreciative that people are interested enough in them and the work that they're doing to come clear from USA in order to work with them and try and help them do their job better and do their job more safely.
They knew what they needed to do, but they didn't know why they needed to do it. So these folks, for the first time, had an understanding of why they were doing what they were doing.
So you took sort of an instinctive stick and rudder approach and gave it a little theory.
Yeah, they did not know some tricks that would help them maneuver the aircraft safely over the ground and manage the wildlife better.
The pilots were like sponges. They simply couldn't get enough.
So we would get done talking and they would just sit in their seats, even though we said, okay, we're done now. They would just sit there and their hands would go up and they had more questions for us.
They're not just receiving information, but they're processing it according to the work that they need to do with their airplanes and coming back with questions about, okay, I need to do this. What's the best way to do it? And what would you suggest in this case? And so they were really immediately putting the knowledge we were passing on to them to work.
That's got to be fun as a teacher.
They were the most satisfying students to teach that we've seen in a long, long time.
The Kings were here in a dual capacity. John is chairman, Martha is secretary of the Charles A. and Ann Morrow Lindbergh Foundation, which helped fund the project this year. It's all part of its mission to promote the use of technology as a means to protect the environment.
You know, Charles and Ann Morrow Lindbergh used the technology of an airplane to see what was happening with the environment and with wildlife all over the world, but particularly in among other places in Africa and in Kenya, because they had a love for the wildlife and the nature here in Kenya.
In 1931, the Lindberghs flew together in a plane called Sirius over uncharted territory to China. It was the basis of the book North to the Orient and a turning point in their views on the environment.
Charles and Ann Morrow Lindbergh gained an appreciation for the beauty and fragility of our environment and the need to preserve it by using an aircraft to fly over it, a technology of flight. And it's very interesting that here, years later, these Kenyan pilots are using the technology of flight to manage wildlife in a very similar sort of way. And, the ability to fly is pretty much the ultimate expression of man's ingenuity and ability to make new things happen. And here we are using this in a way to preserve our environment. And that's actually the mission of the Lindbergh Foundation, is to support innovation and technology to improve our quality of life at the same time preserving our environment. And this is just a wonderful expression of that.
It's been a huge honor for Lindbergh Foundation to be involved in it. And the fact that, you know, such a prestigious organization has an interest in this program and sees it as being so fitting to their mission, I think is so exciting for us. Because we've been out here sort of slugging it out year after year. But to have interest from the Lindbergh Foundation in this could really propel us into another level that could sustain the program for a while, hopefully.
Yeah, it's a sweet thing.
All right.
The balancing act is getting harder and harder. Poaching is on the rise in Kenya, and elephants are once again in the crosshairs. While we were in Tsavo, we visited the elephant orphanage run by the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust in Intumba. We were lucky enough to be there for the lunch stampede, the post-meal mud bath, and the roll in the dirt. Many of these elephants are motherless because of poaching.
Those other ones are snares. We have also been recovered.
Not far from the orphanage, we saw some of the tools of this brutal, cruel trade. Snares, traps, and arrows that are tipped with poison.
They fire the arrow into the elephant, preferably into the spleen. The poison, it's a nerve poison, so it doesn't affect the bloodstream, doesn't affect the meat, so you can eat the meat after the elephant has been poisoned.
Danny Woodley is the senior warden in the Tsavo West National Park.
How long does it take to take down the elephant?
It depends how potent the poison is and how well placed the shot is. But it could take an hour to a week. Sometimes if it doesn't work very well, then the elephant will eventually die of septicemia. Several weeks later.
The poaching increased dramatically in 2008 when South Africa decided to sell off a stockpile of elephant tusks, a trial exemption to an outright ban on the sale of ivory that began in 1989.
And that sent quite a large quantity of ivory to countries in the Far East. And that is legalized ivory. And many people believe, and myself included, this provides a vehicle for introduction of illegal ivory. There can be some monitoring of raw ivory stocks and some control of them. But when it comes down to the retail outlets, little stores that are selling signature seals or chopsticks, and ivory is carved and processed, it's virtually impossible to maintain a good control on it.
And that seems to have led to an upsurge in poaching, as in it is, you know, the price per kilo of ivory within the other range states has increased.
Ivory now fetches $120 a kilo, and a typical elephant carries about 10 kilos of tusk. In this part of the world, $1,200 is a huge incentive for poaching.
A lot of the poaching comes out, the most serious poaching comes out of Somalia. It's run by Somali warlords, the same people who are involved with the piracy off the coast of Somalia, for example, or trafficking drugs, weapons, explosives, implicated in the terror activities here in Kenya and elsewhere. Not the good neighborhood situation.
And a lot of poaching is motivated by desperation.
You've got people that are right on the ragged edge of staying alive.
Safari guide, photographer, author, and biologist Mark Ross has lived and worked in Kenya for nearly 30 years.
If I had 7 or 8 kids and I was starving, I'd probably be out there shooting. You're going to have to give me some good reasons or an alternative. And then, you know, I'd see it differently.
Put this baby up.
Mark is also a pilot who flies his clients to remote safari camps in his Cessna 206. He has a keen appreciation for the Kenya Wildlife Service pilots and their mission.
The air patrols are vital. You've got such huge blocks of land that you cannot access any other mechanized way. You can't go by boat, you can't go by vehicle, you can't even go by motorcycle. You know, places like Tsavo, 10,000 square miles, Serengeti, 14,000 plus. Even the Mara, which is relatively small, is a 2,000 square miles of wildlife area. Aviation is vital.
It's like putting a police car on an interstate. But everybody gets legal in a hurry. No speeders, no reckless drivers, nothing. They see the blinking lights on a patrol car and they behave themselves. Same thing with the bandits, with the poachers. They know there's a patrol plane, they see it flying by, and they say, not this week. We've done a few informal studies, and it appears about 80% decrease in poaching pressure when there is aircraft on patrol. Take those aircraft out of a park for 10 days or 2 weeks, the poachers will start creeping back in. There'll be more and more and more of it.
When the pilots spot heavily armed poachers, it can get very hairy very quickly.
They had laid an ambush. Lucky enough, those guys got into the ambush. A shootout ensued, and actually we lost 3 rangers, and we were able to kill the bandits, and one was still firing at our team. So in the process of me coming over, having a good view of where he was positioned, I was able to direct the other section, who were able now to get an easy target of this bandit, and in the process he was killed because of my support, aerial support. Otherwise, he became so dangerous, he would have actually finished the whole section.
Which is why it is so important that these pilots get the best training possible.
That's the reason that I'm here. I mean, we have this amazing resource, this global resource that you find very few places in the world that's becoming more and more endangered, elephants and rhino and everything else that we fly over every day here. And it belongs to everybody.
I do believe that the environment and wildlife in this country is a resource that belongs to the globe as well as Kenya. And I think if we want to keep it, then we have to pay for it.
You know, it belongs to all of us. It really does. It's not about being a Kenyan.
It's true. We are on a mission, a serious mission, to ensure that we protect this wildlife for the generation of today and those to come.
What these pilots are doing is incredibly important. It's not just about being a good pilot. It's about not only saving their lives, but, you know, and saving the airplane, not getting hurt, but about keeping Kenya and Africa in, you know, keeping the animals here safe.
So we want our wildlife, and we are happy that they're here. And actually, we are going to do everything. That's why I'm taking the risks of, you know, being a flyer and just making sure that, especially as a warden, making sure that, you know, conservation continues. I mean, I'm going to play my bit. You know, when St. Peter comes, or when I eventually leave this world, I want to go to St. Peter and tell him, well, I did my big job, and I've taken care of your animals. These are his animals. Yeah, and we are obliged to take care of them. Yeah.
Appreciate your attention. Sorry we didn't have any popcorn. I want to call up some of the key people that made this possible. First, John and Martha King, please come on up and take a seat. Rich Sugden, somewhere in the house here. Rich, where are you? And last but not least, Patty Wagstaff. Patty, come on up. Come on down. You're on the Tusk is Right. It's good to have you all here with us. And before we get started on our conversation, in the back of the room, Dave Butts, where are you? Dave Butts? There's a videotape editor. He's way back in the corner there. He donated hundreds of hours of time. Hundreds. And he's a pilot. He loves the mission. He loves the movie. And he did a great job putting it together. So give him a round of applause. Hard to get people to work for free for you, isn't it? Yes, it is. All right, guys, it's good to be. It's like being back in Africa on safari, you know. And
the animals are restless.
What's it like seeing this again after a few months, Patty?
It's great. You know, I really haven't watched it. I've only seen it on a screen like this once before at Son of Fun. So, and I've watched it on my computer. But you know, Kenya's. It feels like my second home, because when you're there, you feel such a connection to it, because it's, you know, where we all came from and where these animals are, and I have so many friends there, and it's like, you know, it feels good. It feels like I'm looking at my other home.
Rich, you've stayed in touch with some of the pilots that you spent a lot of time with in that back seat. What do you hear from them?
I have. I get emails from them at least once a week. They're interested in everything that's going on. They asked me to try and find books for them. I was sitting there watching that tonight, and I just realized that around the time we went over there, 50 years ago, I got my pilot's license. It was almost exactly 50 years.
And that's a good way to celebrate way that to celebrate. One. Give them a round of applause for that.
It was one of the most rewarding, challenging, and fascinating things I've ever done. It really was.
You know, this fits in so nicely with the theme this year at AirVenture on Fly for Life, ways that aviation does good works. This is a message that, you know, the general public gets the message about the CEOs from Detroit flying in their Gulfstreams. This is really what general aviation is about. How can we get that message out a little better, John?
Well, you know, this was one of those things where we thought we were doing something good for somebody else, and it wound up we were the beneficiaries. Because what I got was an appreciation for how important flying is. I got an appreciation for how committed these people were and how much it meant to them. And somehow we have to bottle that and tell that story to the world. And these people put huge commitment. We think it's hard for us to learn to fly, but try a place where the instructors don't have much knowledge themselves. They are restricted by their government. In Kenya, the government does not serve them well. Yeah, I thought I would never say this, but it gave me real appreciation for the FAA.
You know, a lot of the things that we do, a lot of the maneuvers that we do in the U.S. for just the basic private pilot license, they don't do in the Kenya system because the government doesn't have it as part of their testing requirement. And so these pilots were doing very well what they had been trained to do, but there was a lot that they needed to have been taught that they weren't taught because the system doesn't function well for them.
There's just no infrastructure for them to learn. Go ahead, Patty.
Yeah, you know, what it really makes you realize is how lucky we are here in the States, FAA or no FAA, but aside from that, and I've flown all over the world, and, you know, we all have, but we have more freedom here and more luxury to fly all the airplanes that you see here and still fly. I can still fly from San Francisco to Florida and never speak to anybody and do it safely, or I can fly in the system and I'm welcome to do either one. And there's no other country in the world, even Canada is much more restrictive, that has the freedom that we have, so we have to continue to fight for it and realize when you look at what they deal with and in their work, how difficult it is for them and all of the every other country in the world is virtually impossible to fly general aviation. So don't ever forget it, whether you travel or not, that we've got that. And every time you give up a little bit of freedom, you're not going to get it back.
One of the things that it...
A round of applause for that one.
One of the things that flying in another country, in this case specifically Kenya, and talking to the pilots that live there and fly there makes you very aware of is how important it is that we have a critical mass of people involved in aviation and how important organizations like EAA and AOPA are to protect our right to fly and, as Patty says, our freedom to fly, because you get in a country like Kenya where the bureaucracy is all tangled up in red tape and is not serving the population well on many levels, not just aviation, and you recognize what a significant difference a strong pilot organization would make. And so you talk about how do we get the story out. We join EAA, we join AOPA, we support the missions of those organizations and go out and tell the story.
We're going to take some questions here in a few minutes, so if you have any thoughts, start thinking about them now, and I'll be looking for hands. Rich, what was the flying like for you? You've flown in a lot of beautiful places. I think about your home in Wyoming. When you had the chance, you know, when you did that first low bank and you saw a herd of elephants, what was that like?
Well, we'd go up. My first student was Moses Lilliset, and Moses was the Messiah that you saw. He was a little hard to understand. That was one of the problems, was communication, because he would always say yes.
He's the guy with the big holes in his ears.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he hadn't been shot at. That was for ear rings.
And as we walked out, I said, "Now, Moses, how much flight time do you have?" And he said, "About 3,000 hours. I said, "Well, what are you going to teach me?" But he had no time in the Husky. He'd just flown the Super Cub, so I was going to transition him from the Super Cub to the Husky, which was a piece of cake. I mean, he was a good pilot. But we would go up and we'd do steep turns and we'd do stalls, and We get all through and I say, okay, now Moses, find me a herd of elephants and count it. I want to know how many males there are in the herd. And he'd say, okay, and off we go. And we go find a herd of elephants, and we go streaking by about 130 miles an hour in a 90-degree bank, and Moses is trying to count these elephants. I said, Moses, just slow down. You know, this airplane can fly nice, really slow. And so he'd slow down to about 50 miles an hour, put down some flaps, and then it became very easy. It was that sort of thing. But it was phenomenal. We saw lions, we saw zebra, we saw giraffes, we saw everything. And just
wild
great
dogs.
People.
Wild dogs.
Wild dog.
And some of them were on the runway, too. Those animals.
Yeah. Patty, talk a little bit about the cultural issues. You know, we touched on that in the movie, but there's a lot more to it than that. The tribal issues, the fact that a Maasai would be discouraged from flying. There's no aviation heritage or tradition in the Maasai culture.
Yeah, no, there's no real aviation heritage, but people do appreciate aviation over there because it's, you know, it's a lifeline. It's like Alaska where you... There's a lot of places you cannot get to without aviation, and the roads are, you know, not always good, or they're dangerous. And there's parts of the country that there are bandits, and you really can't drive safely, especially at night. So people are very appreciative of aviation over there. But with the Kenya Wildlife Service, what I feel is really interesting is that the pilots all come from different tribes. There's Maasai, and there's Luo, there's Lao, there's Samburu. There are Somali Kenyans, there's the English Kenyans, like Danny Woodley, the warden that was talking about the arrows, and there are tribal issues in Kenya. There are tribes that don't like each other, there are tribes that are Kikuyus and other, that's the main, the most populous tribe. They're sort of the dominant tribe, and there have been some, you know, fairly intense political problems because of that. But you get all these guys together and, you know, they might talk about each other when they get back home, but they all work together. And it's really, I think that, and that's one of the things, again, you know, that I love about aviation, that it brings people together. And, you know, we're all sitting here in jeans and t-shirts, and we all come from totally different walks of life and different means. And that's the way it is in Kenya Wildlife Service. You know, they're happy to be together, they work together, they tease each other, and you know, they're buds, and they're sort of going against the odds. My favorite picture at home that I have is one of a pilot, Michael, who still works for them part-time and does some other stuff, and he's a white English Kenyan, and he's got a big hug, or hugging the Somali Kenyan, Isaac, a few years ago, and it just sort of, it just symbolizes, you know, what aviation does to bring it all together, and especially in Kenya. So that's what I found interesting. Plus, as an instructor to deal with the different tribes, you have to learn a little bit about the tribe. You know, some of them come from fishing areas and, you know, just have a different take on things. Some of them are from the city, and, you know, you can explain things in different ways, and you can get more out of the lesson by understanding where they're from.
If there are any questions, you know, let us know. We'll get a microphone in your neighborhood. Okay, there's one down here in the front. Jonna, while we're getting the microphone to her, I wanted to ask you, there were some interesting myths that they had about flying that you kind of exploded for them, so to speak.
Yeah, all the myths that you might have if you had not had a lot of education, they had. There were people who felt that if you turned downwind, all of a sudden the airplane would stall. They were, as Rich said, they were very much afraid to slow the airplane down and maneuver it. And so they were doing turns with enormous load factor. You saw us talking about load factor in there. And the reason is these guys were just deathly afraid of stalling the airplane. And that's because of their instruction. They had just been taught to fly too fast. So these kinds of things really hampered them in what they were doing, because if you're flying that fast, as Rich says, you can't count elephants. And they just really had the misconception that if they did anything like slow the airplane down and go into a bank, that they were going to stall. So they're deathly afraid of that.
Question.
Is this on? Okay. I just got back from Africa a few months ago. I wish I'd have known y'all were there. Anyhow, I was in South Africa, and I was wondering, because I know there's a problem there also, if there are any plans going into any other parts of Africa other than Kenya.
As far as
training pilots, because I know...
Air wings for wildlife conservation or...
Yes, for wildlife trainings. Conservation, yes.
Kenya's the only country in Africa that has a formalized air wing as part of their wildlife service. South Africa has a number of airplanes that patrol, but they're off, you know, they're different organizations, and Kenya's the only one that has the official paramilitary organization. It would be great if the other countries do it, but resources are so hard, money's so hard, and KWS struggles every year to get funds. And every time tourism goes down, you know, there's some incident, and people are afraid to go over there. It's very safe. It's very, very safe. I mean, it's those things are very localized, and it's a great destination for tourism. But every time something happens, you know, globally, then tourism goes down. The funds that go to Kenya Wildlife Service go down, and they suffer. They can't afford fuel and things like that, and then more elephants are killed. So it's this constant struggle. But it's the only country that actually has that formalized paramilitary wing.
Yeah, and I guess the key point there is that Kenya had realized a long time ago that tourism was its gravy train, if you will, and that, you know, protecting the animals was really important part of bringing in revenue for the country. But the interesting thing is, though, that I discovered is that the average Kenyan didn't get the trip we got. They don't get to go to the game preserves like we do.
A lot of average Kenyans have never been to a wildlife preserve.
They don't really see the animals as we do, ironically.
No, which is unfortunate. But there's a big move with some of the organizations, you know, that promote tourism to develop areas where the local, you know, people can go and take advantage of the wildlife park. So they're really, really trying hard, you know. They're not necessarily some of the nicer places that we've been to, though.
Are there any other questions out there? Yeah, we got one down in the front here, if we can. Oh, excellent. Microphone right there.
I have a question for each of you. What was one of your favorite moments?
Start with Rich on the end. Favorite moment?
There were lots. I mean, it was just an adventure every day. One of the interesting stories, which really didn't have much to do with aviation, we were sitting around having breakfast, and Danny Woodley, who was, you saw in the uniform, talking about poaching and killing the elephants, his grandfather started the park system in Kenya by simply, he was a biologist and a conservationist, and he just simply wrote a letter. He got fed up, and he wrote a letter to the big paper there. This is back, I guess, in the 30s, 20s, saying that he thought that all the wildlife should be exterminated because it was destroying the crops and destroying the land, and we need to get rid of all these wild animals. And there was this huge uprising against that. Of course, he didn't sign his name to it. And then they asked him, would you do something to try and help prevent this? And that's how the whole thing started. He wrote the letter, and then he said, oh, sure, I'll be happy to do it. And Danny's father was subsequently the head of the Wildlife Service, and then Danny now is working his way up.
Wow, I didn't know that story. I missed that one. Patty, favorite moment? That's tough.
Again, isn't it? You've been doing it.
This was your seventh or eighth visit, right?
That was my seventh
time.
Yeah,
for us, we were all newbies, but for
the first time I went, though, you know, I'd always wanted to go to Africa, and I'd always wanted to go to Kenya in particular, but because it has a really interesting history, and I could expound on that, but I always think back to my first time when I just couldn't believe that it was for real. I thought I was in Disneyland, and you know, it was like you'd sit there, you know, at a water hole at the lodge, and these animals would come out, you know, the elephants, and you go, okay, bring on the elephants. It was like a, you know, joke. And then bring on the giraffe. Okay, now
the
water buffalo.
Start singing It's a Small World or something,
you know,
right?
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, come on. This cannot be real. And then a hyena, you know, would pop out. And it's like, but it took me about 2 weeks to really process this, you know, the reality that it really is real. It was.
John, do you have a moment?
Yeah, for me, when we first went there, I thought, well, these guys fly a lot. They fly for a living. What are we going to be able to teach them? And we went into risk management, which is a pretty dry subject. We'll just identify the risks and how do you manage them and so on. And we strung it out to about a two-hour program, specifically dealing with the risks they faced in Kenya and so on. And I'm sure that everybody's bladder was full by that time. Mine certainly was. And we got done, and no one got up from their seats. And what we had done is it struck a nerve, and they were approaching their flying now more thoughtfully and in a different way than they had ever done before. And I guess the realization that we might have actually made a difference was the big moment for me.
Martha?
You know, when we were getting ready to go to Kenya, we got advice from a number of different people about what kind of binoculars we needed to take to be able to see the animals and so on. And we knew we would see animals, but, you know, we came prepared with a couple of different kinds of binoculars. What we didn't realize, we went out on our first drive, and you don't need binoculars to see the animals. There's a family of lions, a pride of lions, about where Rich is, and you drive up in your vehicle and you shut down right here, and the dominant female kind of and then puts her head back down and twitches her tail, and in a little bit one of the cubs gets up and comes over and kind of pokes at the side of your vehicle and looks up at you curiously. And I mean, this is the wildlife experience in Kenya. Kenya is, I believe, and Patty, you may know this better than I believe Kenya is the only African country that does not allow any game hunting in the country.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the only one, but it doesn't allow any hunting.
Right, and so what that means is the animals are not afraid.
I think my favorite moment was being at that elephant orphanage. That was truly an extraordinary moment
extraordinary
to be there
too.
For the feeding time and the baby orphan elephants. It's, you know, unfortunately, a sad story at the root of it. And they literally, like somebody had rung a dinner bell, stampeded in, you know, right on time. They were right on time. And we had these huge bottles and fed them and got to pet them and interact with them. And then we watched them go do their mud bath. And then they went and rinsed off. And then they'd roll in the dirt in, with like a talcum powder thing. And off to the woods they went. It was the most amazing thing I've ever been. So if you ever get to Kenya, Sheldrick is a place to go check out. That's a wonderful, wonderful place. And there's some people here with a connection to it. Any other questions from
one
the audience? Yeah,
question,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. One last question. Where is it? Yeah.
I found the flying very interesting, but could you comment on the level of maintenance and certification of the airplanes in that country?
That's Mr. Rutan with the FAA there, I think. Yeah.
It's difficult. Were you going to say? Just quickly, it's really difficult. The planes are really well maintained. They have good mechanics and high deck, and the planes start out really well, but the conditions are really rough. You know, there are very, very few paved strips. Everything is done off this gravel, this really thick, you know, red rock gravel. And the planes just don't hold up. And you're talking about heavy-duty bush planes, Super Cubs, Huskies, etc. And you know, they do better than anything else would do. But I think they last maybe two seasons, and then they have to be rebuilt. You know, that's about, it's tough.
We sell Huskies, so I've flown a lot of new Huskies, and the one that I flew and instructed in had almost 11,000 hours and had been crashed six times, and it flew very well. I couldn't believe it when they, you know, told me what this plane had been
and
through.
Call Mr. Sugden at 1-800-I-SELL-HUSKY, and he'll
take a pitch.
That was our product placement for the evening there.
Along that line, though, Aviat Aircraft and Northwest Husky Sales are going to try and donate a new Husky to the Kenya Wildlife Service every year.
All right. Fantastic. Well, this is great to have you all here. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for watching the movie. Please remember the Lindbergh Foundation. Check us out on the web, lindberghfoundation.org, some of the good work we do there. And we appreciate your time and attention. Have a good evening.
Thank
and
you.
A good show.